Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. Look for the girl with the sun in her eyes and she's gone. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Follow her down to a bridge by a fountain where rocking horse people eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore waiting to take you away. Climb in the back with your head in the clouds and you're gone. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Picture yourself on a train in a station with plasticine porters with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile, the girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio. And they need your support, so be sure to head on over to freedomslips.com. Show them some love. There's some great perks if you make a donation. Tell them you're there because of the New American Dream. And now, I'd like to hand the show over to my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer. But he's taking the night off. I can't do it. Gotta do it by myself. Tonight, we welcome special guests M.K. Davis, Larry Pinkney, Anthony Rayson, Frank Cordero, and Phil Ferrugio. So tonight we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Port Orange, in Fort Lauderdale, in Des Moines, in Chicago, in Minneapolis, in Benton, Mississippi, and wherever you are. We've received word that Sherwood Ross, a longtime columnist for this show, has been hospitalized. From Sherwood's son Drew wrote us, "My dad had a fall and has been in the hospital since July 12th. He's not expected to recover in less time than 6 to 12 months due to hemorrhaging. I know being on your show was very important to him. I wanted to let you know. If you'd like to send a card or flowers, he's currently in Room 909, West Wing, Jackson Memorial Hospital, 1611 Northwest 12th Avenue, Miami, Florida, 33136. And the number at the hospital is 305-585-1111. And I've been trying for days to get to talk to Sherwood and haven't managed to get through yet, but I'll keep trying, and I'm sure he'd love to hear from some of you listeners, too. The New American Dream Radio Show is once again heard from Randall from Stevens Point. I got my gun in my truck. Told you I'm headed up for the woods, then up the mountain. That's where I am right now. I can see you all from right here through my scope. Yeah, don't worry. I got the safety on. It's on now. All right. Well, tell Bubba Jean I always loved her. Don't follow me. I got on my camo socks. You'd never find me. When you hear about the big shootout, all that, well, that'd be me. Randall from Stevens Point is now underground in America. Not really. He's in the mountains, though, but in Brazil, overlooking the Olympic Games, watching the track and field events from high in the mountains through the scope on his rifle, just because he can. Before he gets started, he wanted us to again relay this message. Now, first, I got something to say to my relatives in Baraboo. I'm really not talking to any of you, okay? You know why. Randall's note continues. Cold War began during the Truman administration, lasted through the Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter administrations, and was ended in Reagan's second term when Reagan and Gorbachev came to an agreement that the conflict was dangerous, expensive, and pointless. Cold War did not cease for long, only for the last of Reagan's second term and the 4 years of George H.W. Bush's term. In the 1990s, President Clinton restarted the Cold War by breaking America's promise not to extend NATO into Eastern Europe. George W. Bush heated up the renewed Cold War by pulling the U.S. out of anti-ABM treaty, and Obama's made the war hotter with irresponsible rhetoric and by placing U.S. missiles on Russia's border and overthrowing the Ukrainian government. Cold War was a Washington creation. It was a work of the Dulles brothers. Allen was the head of the CIA, and John Foster was the Secretary of State, positions they held for a long time. Brothers had a vested interest in the Cold War. They used the Cold War to protect the interests of their law firm's clients, and they used it to enhance the power and budgets associated with their high positions in government. Much more exciting to be in charge of foreign policy and covered activity in dangerous times. Cold War was pointless except for the Dulles brothers' interest and those of the military security complex. The Soviet government, unlike the U.S. government today, had no world hegemonic aspirations. Stalin had declared socialism in one country and purged the Trotskyists, the advocates of world revolution. Communism in China and Eastern Europe were not products of Soviet international communism. Mao was his own man. The Soviet Union kept Eastern Europe, from which the Red Army drove out the Nazis, as a buffer against a hostile West. In those days, the Red Scare was used like the Muslim terrorist scare today to force the public to go along with an agenda without debate or understanding. Consider the costly Vietnam War, for example. Ho Chi Minh was an anti-colonist leading a nationalist movement. He was not an agent of international communism. But John Foster Dulles made him one and said that Ho must be stopped or the domino theory would result in the fall of all of Southeast Asia to communism. Vietnam won the war and did not launch the aggression that Dulles predicted against Southeast Asia. Ho had pleaded with the U.S. government for support against the French colonial power that ruled Indochina, rebuffed. Ho turned to Russia. If Washington had simply told the French government that the colonialist era was over, France needed to vacate Indochina, the disaster of the Vietnam War would have been avoided, but invented threats to serve interest groups that become hobgoblins then as now, and Washington, along with many others, became a victim of its imaginary monsters. NATO was unnecessary, as there was no danger of the Red Army sweeping into Western Europe. The Soviet government had enough trouble occupying Eastern Europe with its rebellious populations. The Soviet Union was faced with an uprising in East Germany in 1953, from Poland and Hungary in 1956, and from the Communist Party itself in Czechoslovakia in 1968. The Soviet Union suffered enormous population loss in World War II and required its remaining manpower for post-war reconstruction. It was beyond Soviet ability to occupy Western Europe in addition to Eastern Europe. We had the Cold War because it served the Dulles brothers and the power and the profits of the military security complex. There were no other reasons for the Cold War. The new Cold War is the work of a handful of neoconservative fanatics who believe that history has chosen the U.S. to wield hegemonic power over the world. The new Cold War is far more dangerous than the old because the respective war doctrines of the nuclear powers have changed. The function of nuclear weapons is no longer retaliatory. Mutually assured destruction was a guarantee that the weapons would not be used. In the new war doctrine, nuclear weapons have been elevated to first use in a preemptive nuclear attack. Washington first took this step, forcing Russia and China to follow. The new Cold War is more dangerous for a second reason. During the first Cold War, American presidents focused on reducing tensions between nuclear powers. But the Clinton, George W. Bush, and Obama regimes have raised tensions dramatically. NATO lost its purpose when the Soviet Union collapsed. However, too many careers, budgets, and armaments profits depended on NATO. The West does not represent the values that the world has been brainwashed to believe are associated with the West. For example, there was no need to attack Japanese civilian cities with atomic weapons. Japan was trying to surrender, was holding out against the U.S. demand for unconditional surrender only in order to spare the emperor from execution for war crimes over which he had no control. Of course, the Americans were too ignorant to understand the situation, and so little Truman, bullied all his life as a nonentity, glorified his power and dropped the bombs. Okay, then, that's about it. This is Randall from Stevens Point, underground in America and in the world. Our first guest of the evening is M.K. Davis, and I'm going to get him on the line right about now.
Hello.
Well, hello, M.K. It's the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Okay. I guess what I want to talk about tonight is a bit of a breakthrough on the Patterson film. In the Patterson film has had many breakthroughs over the years. But one of the issues with the film is the size of the film subject, and that has been a bone of contention for many years, with a lot of people weighing in on it and a lot of people having various beliefs about the size. Now, one of the latest estimates of size is 7'4", and that comes from Bill Munns, who made his estimate after he concluded that Patterson had taken the original lens off the camera and replaced it with a different lens, which gave him 7'4". Years ago, there was a scientific organization who was chartered to examine the film and do the size estimates. It was called the North American Science Institute. And it was run by a gentleman by the name of Jeff Glickman. Now, Jeff Glickman, he used other photographs taken of the area, and he would known distances to the first limb on a tree and that sort of thing. But you have to remember that if it's just a few feet behind or to the front of that tree, and perspective is what you don't get on a two-dimensional film, well, then the height estimate changes tremendously, and it don't take very much. In other words, if you're going to use a tree, it needs to be standing hugging that tree. So he came up with just a little over 7 feet, and his weight estimate was a tremendous weight. It was 1,952 pounds, which most people stopped at. But he stayed stuck by that weight. He says, I arrived at that weight using the scientific method, and he said, I don't see any reason to change it. I'm not trying to win a popularity contest. So he stuck by his weight estimate. Now it seems that his weight may not have been that far off. When I went out last October to the Patterson film site, I took a Japanese film crew, and they wanted to reenact the Patterson film, so they asked me if I would be the Sasquatch, and I was the person to be it because I had studied the film enough to know that when she looks back at the camera, she takes 4 steps before she looks back down at the ground again. So I did that. And I did it from her perspective. They filmed me, but I carried my camera, and I used it like her eyes, and so that the viewer would see what she saw. So I looked over at the cameraman who was shooting me as if he was Patterson, and I took 4 steps, and then I came back. And I did a split screen and was very surprised to find that at the speed the film was running, the Patterson creature finished quite a bit ahead of me. And I know from my measurements that I've done that that's not possible. That's not biomechanically possible because of their size for size. So my only solution I could come up with was that the film has been running too fast. So I slowed the Patterson film down until there was a sink that she matched me as a human being. And I had to slow it down to probably below 16 frames per second. And the Russians back in the 70s took measurements of Patterson's cycles of up and down when he stepped. And they determined that it was 16 frames per second. And I cannot, knowing what I know now, disagree with that. But it may possibly be even slower. So that means that when the arms swing cumbersomely and slowly and go all the way back and then come all the way forward, that's momentum. That indicates size. And, you can duplicate that by putting about 20 or 30 pounds on barbells and holding them and trying to walk swinging your arms. You'll see that it'll carry through, lift your arm way up, carry backward, lift your arm way back. And that's what you see in that film. So that indicates great mass. I would say that the Patterson subject is heavier per cubic square inch than a human being is. In other words, if she were your exact same size, she would outweigh you. Her muscle mass is of such a nature that the muscles are compact, and every system in the body is designed to support that. So you're going to have more blood, you're going to have bigger lungs, bigger heart, bigger bones. So it goes back to the height, what I was telling you about. John Green, 8 months after the filming of the Patterson film, filmed another film from that exact spot, having Jim McLaren walk that exact same route. And I was able to superimpose the Patterson film over it and line up the background. And everything lines up and matches. That means that the two cameras that shot each film both had the same lens, or you couldn't get them to line up. So they both had the same lens. Everything lined up, and it gave me the correct height for the film subject. I put her right there by Jim McLaren, who was 6'5". And this thing is probably 6'10", around there. But it varies, because at times she's pretty humped over, and at times she's standing straighter. It's going to be right in that era. She towers over McLaren. Her belt line, where if she wore pants and a belt, her belt line would be right around his chest. McLaren 6'5" in his boots. So when you see that superimposed image over McLaren and you blink them back and forth, you realize that this thing is far too massive to have been a suit. There's just no way it's going to be a suit. And the heaviness of it, yeah. Even though I don't believe he was accurate at 1,952 pounds, but I don't think his height estimate was correct either. So if you adjust down to 6'10", you're going to be 1,000 pounds, half a ton. Well, if you look at the tracks that come from that area, and I found some last October, they were 4 inches deep in sand that I could not put a dent in. And I weighed 238 pounds. So, how heavy is the Patterson subject? Well, it's just a guess, but I'm going to say heavier than you think. You wouldn't want her to step on your foot, she would crush it. If she slapped you on the back, she would cave your lungs in. They may, from the outside looking in, look very much like us. But from the inside looking out, they're going to be very different. Very different. It's almost like they were built for stronger gravity. Because, I mean, they got the muscles in there. They pack them in there. Tendons, muscles, everything to support it. So next time you feel like hugging a Sasquatch, you probably need to think twice. Am I anywhere close, Chuck?
You have, you probably have about 2 more minutes.
All right. Well, let me elaborate a little bit on if you want to see some of these images that I have some very good images prepared. They're the form of blinking GIFs that blink back and forth between John Green's film and then the Patterson film, and then they fade in and out, and you can really get good comparisons. And you can find that at my blog site. It's thedavisreport.wordpress.com. And I think that you won't have any problem once having seen this, seeing for yourself or estimating for yourself the size of the Patterson subject. And after all these years, you know, something actually reliable comes along that turns a two-dimensional object into something that you can actually get three-dimensional estimates. Thanks to the work of John Green and his foresight.
Well, maybe quite as long as I thought. We'll talk Monday.
Radio.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rest! You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enjoy your
extra big-ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another?
Extra big-ass fries.
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford
oh,
to make
no,
a purchase.
No, no.
I'm sorry you're
come
having
on.
Trouble.
My kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life, it goes in eternity.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Actually, I wrote a piece.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Now, stay tuned for the American Dream Something Something Playhouse Theater, sponsored by General Electric. Tonight, we hear the voice of a legendary American journalist who covered the civil rights movement up close and now reports on the Bush and Obama misdeeds. That writer, journalist, real newspaper man is Sherwood Ross. Ross is an actual reporter who did not lie to us. The United States is slipping into dictatorship as it is spending gigantic amount of money for wars instead of internal issues. The country is being run by the military-industrial complex. This country is slipping into dictatorship. The people of the world have got to be made aware that it is dangerous. It is armed and dangerous. U.S. authorities are spending $700 billion for war. They're spending, by contrast, $500 million for the Peace Corps. These figures have got to be turned around. Why don't we hear about shootings in Glencoe, Winnetka, and Wilmette, Illinois, in the well-to-do suburbs? It's because there's no poverty in those suburbs. It's because people aren't struggling with other people for the basic necessities of life. Aristotle's quotation saying poverty is the parent of crime and revolution is true. We do not have a president, we have not had presidents who will address the problems of the inner cities, Ross said. Unless we have a president who will do something for people of color in our country, who will improve the schools, who will improve the job opportunities, who will improve the housing, who will give people a reason to live with dignity and respect, we are not going to have an end to the gun culture. Even if we were to pass 100 laws banning guns, it would not end. We need a more fundamental change than that. This has been the New American Dream Something Something Playhouse Theater, sponsored by General Electric. Tonight we heard the voice of legendary American journalist Sherwood Ross. Ross is an actual reporter who did not lie to us. And now we're going to hear from Frank Cordero at the Catholic Worker in Des Moines, Iowa.
Well, here we are, mid-August, and life is really humming here at the Worker House, like it's 96 and over 100 humidity-wise. We're finishing up our first shift of food, and folks are coming at 6. So pretty hot here. People are here because they're hungry and they need to be, because it's not really pleasant all that much. Better outdoors, that's what I'd say. Right now we're a week away, a week and a few days away from celebrating our 40th anniversary. So a lot of stuff going into that. And all that's about is we've been a Catholic Worker here in Des Moines for 40 years, 1976. And I've been part of it first 7 years, and then I dropped out, became a priest, and a little over 15 years later came back to the house and have been with it ever since. So this is a community that survived the leaving of its founder, and then 15 years later, accepted him back. I'm really excited about what's going on here regarding our 40th, because we're highlighting a justice issue in the church. And of course, that issue is women's ordination. And there's a long history with our community and the Catholic Church in Des Moines. The first years were just wonderful with Bishop Dingman. And post-Morris Dingman, these bishops from Minnesota have not been all that kind to us, or generous, to the spirit of, social justice and reform. And to that order, this year, we're having, Reverend Janice Dereski be our priest. She's going to celebrate a Eucharist, the Catholic Mass, on Sunday, the 28th, here in a lot just across the street from the Catholic Worker at 8:30. And with her that weekend is coming Father Roy Bourgeois. Now, Roy is a rather famous Catholic priest in the United States. He's a Vietnam vet. He's an oblate, a Mariano priest who served in Brazil. He came back to the States and has been involved in the resistance movement and peace movement, and helped start School of America Watch, which everyone knows is that wonderful witness that goes on every year at Fort Benning, Georgia, to expose the truth that during the 80s and the 90s, this country trained Latin American soldiers to torture and kill people. Well documented. And by doing that, they help keep that whole history alive. And of course, it's linked up to what we're doing these days, torture and killing. They're all linked together. The other thing Roy did was a number of years ago, he went to Janice's ordination and laid his hands on her, as other women priests did and others at that ceremony. And because of his support for her in women's ordination, he's been excommunicated. So we're bringing Roy back. So it's Roy and Janice. Roy's going to talk on Friday at 7:30 at the church here, real close to the Catholic Work, three blocks away. United Trinity Methodist Church. And then Saturday we're having a picnic celebration and a panel. We're going to have a panel discussion with Father Roy and Reverend Janice and others, and asking the question, what would a more listening and less judging Catholic Church look like regarding women? So this promises to be a very important weekend, both in, you know, marking a milestone in our community, and pushing along the issue of justice for women in the church.
Well, that
kind of went rather long there, didn't I?
No, not at all, not at all. That it sounds like a lot going on. Congratulations on the anniversary.
That's only one part of it. Chuck, I want to tell you that also, that on that same weekend, the people who are resisting the pipeline, the oil pipeline that's coming through, the Balkan pipeline coming through Iowa, they're planning on doing civil disobedience. And on that same weekend, I'm going to pull myself away so I can at least do something to help them do their training. My partner, Jessica Reznicek, currently right now is in North Dakota at the Spirit Camp. She plans on coming back and getting busted in Iowa. So there's a kind of a really important direct action campaign gearing up, because these pipelines are now starting to be put in the ground. And now that they're being put in the ground, people are starting to resist it from the Native American reservation on out. So any of y'all in the Midwest listening to this, you know, keep your ears open and your nonviolent speakers on, and join us, because it's real important to stop these pipelines. It really is.
Well, keep up the good work, Frank. Really. And really. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Our next guest of the evening is Anthony Rayson. He's a prison activist out of Chicago, Illinois. And usually he is live, but he had another commitment tonight, so he generously allowed me to pre-record his segment, and I'm going to play that for you right now.
Today I'd like to read some writings from two remarkable women prisoners at the Indiana State Prison in Indianapolis. The first one is Anastasia Schmid, who actually wrote a piece of analysis she just sent me that I haven't even looked at yet. It's called Crafting the Perfect Woman, How Gynecology, Obstetrics, and American Prisons Operate to Construct and Control Women. It's shocking, amazing analysis. But anyway, this is poetry in written word from these two, and the other lady's name is, her name is Brittany James. She's also incarcerated over there. Okay, Anastasia's piece, first piece entitled, Thieves of Lives, Murderers of Souls. How are prison officials and the judicial system at large any better? Are they better? Then the people they house, is not nearly a proper word for the desolate space and dehumanizing tortures of these human warehouses for those deemed less than human and lawless. Lawless in that all rights to a prisoner's personhood have been lost. Yet worse than the loss of rights is the loss of voice. To be deemed as having nothing of value to say or contribute, no rational intellect, ideas, creativity, possibly no thoughts at all, no emotion worth validating. Complete personhood lost and voice silenced, so those in their violent conquest, assuming positions of authority and superiority, can convince the rest of the world that their captives are held and tortured justly, brainwashing the masses that prisoners are incapable of anything other than lies and evil, the innate desire to inflict harm on anyone and everything if given the chance. This type of distortion and stigmatized shaping of select human beings allows corruption and atrocities to continue unabated, but the methods of dehumanization in these forms are sadly overt methods when assessing the big picture. It's the smoke and mirrors illusion of reform and rehabilitation, the illusory guise of treatment that is the most sinister, the systematic use of language to deceive using altruistic vernacular as though these cages offer true programs of help, assistance to facilitate healing and well-being. Just enough talk of, we're doing the right thing to help poor, unfortunate, wayward people to make the bleeding hearts feel better about casting their vote for another jail or prison to be erected. Erection, the rise of neoliberal capitalistic gain, building more fortresses of slavery and degradation, getting off on stolen bodies and slain spirits. Here's a little poem called A Complete Story in a Box. To beat and bruise and batter with his fists, his words, his dick, his looks, violently accosting and penetrating me over and over and over again with the very energy his presence exudes. Like tentacles of an octopus, I am strangled being in the same room with him. This storehouse of wasted emotions, stacks and stacks of shoulda, woulda, couldas, boxes of if-only, expired memories and outdated dreams, perishable love, the darkened form of a broken child, cowering in sadness and fear, the silhouette of madness, no more woman than a simplistic figurine on a public restroom door, hiding amongst the filth of strangers, a figment of my own imagination, a created image, no real in reality, a pseudo-TV show of a life for righteous voyeurs. I am a character playing the role I never should have been cast into, this negative equation. I keep subtracting the breaths of my life, counting the ticks left inside this bomb before my cerebral cortex explodes into an inappropriate hysterical fit of laughter over the grief of what never was. Here's another one. Questioning food for thought. Righteous indignation. Who is a criminal? What is a crime? And who gets to decide? Is this story really so unbelievable? Is it really fiction? Dark humor? Or just disguised as such? Where's the line? It's all so blurred. Was there ever really a line at all? How difficult is it to cross? And how many people lie to themselves thinking they couldn't cross it? And how many different ways have they already and just haven't been caught? Or were they caught and got away with it anyway? Top of the apex, the 1%. Power and money talk. Or do no one hell of a job keeping shit quiet? There's a fine line between fantasy and reality. Maybe fiction is the way to indulge just enough. to escape the reality so we can continue to live in righteous indignation, even if that too is merely fiction. In a nation labeling and locking up fictitious stories and lies, get off your soapbox before you too are trapped inside one. Okay, well, here's some from Brittany James, sort of being mentored by Anastasia. And she writes, pins and needles made the way to being reborn, and in corrections, not all live voices are created equal. This isn't an empty box. Lines inspire me to redefine what is and isn't possible. I blend, shape, and mesh until I'm at the perfect angle for complete balance. Always a steady flight plan when it comes to facing harsh realities. Create my own lines and curve my eight ball down a snake hole. A steady beat defining a way to the complete. And here's her couple of her poems. This one's called Pain. Pain in my chest, a test I can't pass. Failure, so we abort. Walk away with empty hands. This door is closed. There is no vacancy. An empty soul. The journey's over. Completion, but I didn't win. Is there a prize? Or did I see past the prize until I missed it completely? Never again. 13 steps back. No need to retrack. I felt every step. Honor, jump off. Take off the mask. There's nothing to hide. Overdrive. There's too much to cope. Cut deep or not at all. No one wants superficial. No way out, so why not stay in? Brew and stew a venomous bile. Sit and shit until it's too sordid to ever be pure. Crystal clear that something's wrong. Drawn to all the bad, sick, and twisted things. What do you see in the mirror? Deranged and disturbed or pretty and pink? Thoughts on the brink of the cup that never fills. A constant lack of, always without. Poverty, rich in soul, mind and body. If you look in the mirror long enough, you could be somebody, anybody there. Unnoticed and untouched, there never is enough. Time's not always on your side. Crouch and hide from the ununderstood. It will never make sense. It's only a pain in your chest that happens to be a test. There's another one entitled Over. Over and done, without results. Time only made things worse. Anger and resentment is well known. A feeling I've grown all on my own, always alone. I'm sick of without. It never pays off. Leave it be and wipe hands clean. Recycle the salvageable and hoard it because it's all you've got, all you'll get. Deprived and hungry for what I don't have, will I ever have? Out of sight and out of mind. It's over. We ran out of time. Dissect all you knew and gain a different way, a random route with a random you, looking at a distorted view of what never was. Pretend an illusion of your own mind, lucid dreams and reality on a tightrope. Cut both and you have a noose. There is always a way out. Even if there's no door or window, tunnel vision, all you see is the beginning and the end. Severed ties, there shouldn't have been a second try. Fly by with a wave goodbye because I should have never said hello. This is one called Hate. Hate, sedate me till it's over. Nail me to a chair and strip me of my thoughts. The feelings never die. I found the missing link in the chain. Pedal my way straight to hell. Fall down and never get up. A coffin with no escape route. Who knows how to use a first aid kit? Resuscitate me. One, two, three, breathe. Operation, there is no pulse. The zombie from The Walking Dead. Even they feel hunger. Feed my uncensored need. Food for thought? My thoughts are never enough food. Scale your way up the side of a building and see the view before you decide to jump. You may want to finish before you start again. Run in circles until you're right back where you started. Replay and rewind and then burn. The images you've reflected on, welcome to reality. If reality is real, then why do we question the things that shouldn't need proof? Decipher through the unnecessary and find what you remember. Distorted images flushed down a drain. No pain, no gain. What do you gain when there's only pain? A constant ache. Fall asleep and never wake. Choking on a dream because shit's too real. Throw away the deal. You were brought sentenced to this duration. It's psycho, crazy, paranoia, my reality. Sedate me till it's over. This is what's called revolted silence. We revolt against silence with a bit of speaking. But what's it really matter when the voices are silenced? Volume's turned completely down. No sound but static. What's the real picture here? Everything is the same, only not. Voices stepped on by too many shoes and only one set of feet with one heartbeat, and they could really care less if it continues to beat or not. Slave day for all day. Stand up and say something, any fucking thing. Scream out on lines, splash ink until you can't think of anything else to say. Silenced and muzzled like a mutt. Even they're treated better than us. Take a stand or you'll continue to fall. Never-ending well of hopeless dreams and those silent screams for help. 911, the emergency is I'm dying inside from oppression. I just need to be heard. Is that so absurd to open up your ears and hear my fears that taunt me about another thing I may wake up to not having, lack of, to cease, put to a halt, in abundance no more? Liberties become luxuries that are no more. No more voices because no one hears them anyways. All you see is a number. So it's grim in these prisons. In Indiana, women's prison is actually kind of unique because they actually do positive things unlike other prisons. For example, they make netting. So people in Africa can have netting so the malaria virus can't kill them through the mosquitoes. So they send nettings to Haiti and all through Africa. They have a vegetable garden on the premises, which actually helps feed them, but they also supply local pantries around Indianapolis with fresh vegetables. But even doing those halfway decent things, I mean, they are good things to do, but it's under this prison conditions, this destruction of lifetimes. So just like the men that are warehoused all throughout this country, the women suffer as well, and even more so in many ways. It's rare to get a voice out of a women's prison because most all of them are young.
That was Anthony Racin, and he's a monthly columnist, and we'll hear from him again next month.
Fries, I got an empty box.
Would you like another?
Extra big ass fries.
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
No, no.
I'm sorry you're having
trouble.
Come
on. My kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life, it goes in eternity.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Now, from Port Orange, Florida, we stopped at World News Trust and Nation of Change and many other sites. Here's Phil Ferrugio with It's the Umpire, Stupid.
The great city crawls with people, some smartly dressed, many of them many of them shabby, a few beautiful but most not, all reduced by the towering structures around them, but scuttling, hurrying, intent in the milky morning sun upon some plan or scheme or hope they are hugging to themselves, the reason for living another day, each impaled live upon the pin of consciousness, fixed upon advancement and self-preservation, that and only that. I want to stand as close to the edge as I can without going over. Out on the edge, you see all the kinds of things you can't see from the center. There's no reason why good cannot triumph as often as evil. The triumph of anything is a matter of organization. If there are such things as angels, I hope that they are organized along the lines of the mafia. Still in all, why bother? Here's my answer. Many people need desperately to receive this message. I feel and think as much as you do. Care about many of the things you care about, although most people do not care about them. You are not alone. And now, for your local Earth news, this is Chuck Gregory with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard. Jill Stein in the news from CNN. Attention, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. The Commission on Presidential Debates has revealed exactly how it will determine who gets to be on stage this fall. In a normal election season, this announcement wouldn't matter much, but this year, Johnson, the Libertarian Party nominee, and Jill Stein, the Green Party contender, are both hoping to make the cut. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are the only two definite participants, since they're polling well above the commission's 15% threshold for invitations. Johnson and Stein are below the threshold and are trying to change that between now and mid-September. That's when the commission's selection criteria will be applied. On Monday, the commission announced the five polls that will be averaged together to determine who is receiving 15% support nationwide. The polls are ABC, Washington Post, CBS, New York Times, CNN, Opinion Research Corporation, Fox News, and NBC, Wall Street Journal. The polls were chosen with the professional advice of Frank Newport, editor-in-chief of Gallup, the commission said. The commission announced the 15% threshold in October 2015, but now it's explaining the process in more detail. The criteria would be applied in mid-September, the commission said, not naming an exact date. The first debate is scheduled for September 26th. If a candidate is invited to the first presidential debate, that person's vice presidential running mate will be invited to the vice presidential debate, the commission said. The criteria will be reapplied between the first and second presidential debates and the second and third presidential debates. In other words, if Johnson or Stein aren't polling above 15% by mid-September but start to edge up after the first debate, they still have a chance to make it onto the stage. CNN added up the results of the most recent recent ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox, and NBC polls to assess where the four candidates stand today with the commission's criteria in mind. The results cover a period from July 29 to August 4. Clinton has 44% support, Trump 36%, Johnson 10%, and Stein 5%. The most recent CBS and Fox polls did not include Stein. If they continue to exclude her, the average will be based on the polls that include a given candidate, a commission official said Monday. But that may be irrelevant. A Fox News spokeswoman said on Monday that Stein would be included in its polling. CNN held a Green Party town hall with Stein on Wednesday night. The network has previously televised two Libertarian Party town halls with Johnson. Here's an editorial from the Los Angeles Times. The presidential debates should include more than two candidates. The Commission on Presidential Debates has scheduled three nationally televised events between now and the November election that seem likely under its current rules to be limited to the two major party candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. That would be a disservice to voters who would not get to hear from several candidates who, although they are long shots, could conceivably win the presidential race in November. The commission should ease off a bit on its rules by dropping for at least one debate the requirement that participants achieve 15% voter support or more in five national public opinion polls. Dropping the 15% hurdle would give voters a chance to engage with some alternative ideas they might otherwise miss. There's nothing wrong with that. The commission currently limits the stage to candidates who meet the 15% threshold and are on the ballot in enough states to be able to collect the 270 electoral votes it takes to win the presidency. But the requirement of mathematical viability strikes us as a sufficient filter to keep the stage from being clogged with distracting fringe candidates who can't possibly win. Why should candidates who could potentially be elected and who might gain even more support if they could get their message before voters on a national platform be barred from participating? Furthermore, dropping the 15% hurdle would give voters a chance to engage with some alternative ideas they might otherwise miss. As of now, that would mean adding two lecterns to the stage, giving space to Libertarian nominee Gary Johnson and Green Party nominee Jill Stein. We're not naive. We understand that neither is likely to garner sufficient support to win any states in November, let alone the majority of Electoral College votes. But debates shouldn't be about anointing winners by omitting competitors. They should be frank exchanges of views on a wide range of subjects, exposing the candidate's poise under pressure. Additionally, in this era of extreme cynicism about our political processes, expanding the debate lineup would help counter the perception in some quarters that the debate system is rigged, to use a term that's been brought up often in this race, in favor of the two major parties. After all, it was those very two parties which just happened to have been instrumental in creating the debate commission in the first place. Rules that limit participation to Democrats and Republicans while excluding candidates who have a small but not zero chance of winning might understandably be construed as self-dealing. There is an argument to be made that including too many candidates could limit the give and take between the two candidates in whom voters have shown the most interest and who have the best chances of winning. But remember that Trump and Clinton have high negatives among voters, many of whom may be searching for an option C. And expanding the stage for one night serves the better interests of democracy, while still leaving two more debates for the kind of exchanges that can help sharpen voters' views and perceptions. That's all, folks. That's the news, and we're out of here. Good night and good luck, and so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Step up to the plate. Good to go. Take it to the next level. At the end of the day, bring something to the table. Have a good day. It is what it is. Time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire. And our next guest is Larry Pinkney, an original Black Panther, and we're going to call Larry right now.
Hello, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Greetings to you and our audience, all our family out there, sisters and brothers. I'm going to be brief, as I try to be every week. I want to begin by saying, what is a wasted vote? I repeat, what is a wasted vote? And let me answer that. A wasted vote is a vote that one casts for someone that you really do not believe in. You know, you've heard that expression. We've all heard the expression, I held my nose and voted for that person. Well, that's a wasted vote. A vote that matters is a vote that you cast not merely for a person, but more importantly, for what that person stands for. A wasted vote, on the other hand, is a vote where one holds their nose and casts a vote saying, oh, well, maybe this is the lesser of the two evils. But the fact of the matter is there no such thing as a lesser of the evils, because the lesser of the evils is what? It's still evil. The fact of the matter is all of us need to understand that both the Democrat and Republican parties are joined at the hip. The Democrats, particularly the DNC, have shown themselves to be absolutely the antithesis of democracy. Now, whether you were or any of us were supporters of Bernie Sanders or not is irrelevant. What is relevant is that the actions that were taken to subvert democracy by Hillary Clinton and her campaign and the DNC, i.e. Democratic National Committee, proved clearly that the system is totally rigged. As far as the Republicans are concerned, what more need I say? We as a people, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people need to stand up, struggle for what we really believe in, not struggle against merely, oh, this may be a little bit better. No. When we do that, we are casting, we're like a hamster on a wheel. You know how that hamster just runs? When I was a kid, I had a hamster. That hamster would run. Oh, it would run. But you know what? It never got anywhere because it was on that spinning wheel. And this is what we need to get off of. Get off of the spinning wheel. We have other alternatives. We have, first and foremost, the alternative of ourselves, rejecting a rotten, filthy, corrupt system from top to bottom. It is time for a systemic, and I repeat, systemic change. So what is a wasted vote? A wasted vote is a vote that you cast for something that you really do not believe in. You know, there's Jill Stein out there. There's Gary Johnson out there. There's a Constitutional Party out there. There are other alternatives. And as long as people say, oh, they'll never win, those are the very people who are ensuring that we don't bring about systemic change. Don't be the hamster in the cage running on that endless spinning wheel. Don't be that hamster. Get off the wheel. Please tell your brother and sister friends to get off the wheel. It will take time, perhaps, no doubt. But that's what struggle is all about. Struggle is protracted. It is protracted. You begin at a point and you move forward. Contrary to Hollywood, it does not happen overnight. But we must take huge steps to make sure that it happens at all. So I say to you, my sisters and brothers, do not waste your vote. Do not, if you're going to vote, do not waste it. Do not waste it on those parties that are joined, or political parties that are joined at the hip, the corporate warmongering parties. That would be a wasted vote. And as we said in the original Black Panther Party, all power to the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. We didn't say all power to the corporations. We didn't say all power to the 1%. We didn't say all power to the corporate elite. We said all power to the people. That's everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. So do not be fooled. Remember that old song that came out back in the day? We won't get fooled again. Don't get fooled again. Please, don't get fooled again. This is a long and protracted struggle, but it's time to take strong action to change this system, be we black, white, brown, red, or yellow. So I'm not going to go on and on. I want to thank everyone out there in the new American dream land, and let's make our dream a reality. You know, dreams only happen when we do something to make them happen. So let us remember that this so-called election, which you and I know is not an election, it's a selection. But we can change that. We can change it locally, statewide, and you know what? We can even change it nationally and then globally. It takes hard work. It takes time. And brothers and sisters and brothers, it takes vision. And this is what we must struggle for. Sick and tired of people out there saying, I don't like this, I don't like that, this is wrong and that's wrong. Of course. But let's struggle for what we do like. Struggle for what we do want. Struggle to come together and to find our common ground. And we know that common ground is not in the Democratic or that other party. We know that. So let's act accordingly. We act in our interests. We act locally. We think nationally and globally. That is our objective. So, again, I don't want to go on and on, but thank you so very, very much. Each one teach one. Each one reach one. That's what this struggle is all about. Thank you, my brother.
Larry, thank you so much. That was really quite an inspiring message. And, that whole thing about wasting your vote, well, that's a tough decision, you know. You hear so many things from so many people, and ultimately you have to make up your own mind.
Right. Right. Thank you, my brother. Take good care.
Thank you, Larry. Talk to you next month.
All right. Bye-bye.
your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The wood creaked as it swayed. The chains screeched in harmony. Jack Robert King sat in the middle of the swing, his arms stretched wide. On his right, Cherry furrowed her brow as Jack kicked off on each round, throwing them off balance. Under Jack's left arm, Johnny clutched Biggie, the pitch-black six-week-old kitten that Johnny and Jack had picked up at the Humane Society. Johnny held its wide paw up to his palm in the car and named it. Now the kitten leaned into Johnny's side, purred, and closed both eyes. Biggie licked his hand. Johnny petted its head. 4 ball gloves lay around the home plate area, along with a bat and 2 balls. Cherry burrowed into Jack and looked up at him with star-filled green eyes. She reached up and plucked his new white cap and pulled it low over her own brow. Lee balanced on the slat railing with her back to the others. "Hear that?" she said over her shoulder. She teetered on the beam with a loose grasp of both hands. Her feet played chopsticks on the vertical runners. "What, honey?" said Cherry. She slipped one flat hand at her Jack's butt, right buttock as the sky slipped another shade. "Is this hell?" Jack cried out loud in his first sentence. "No, sweet cheeks, it's Ohio." Cherry looked up at him. Johnny put his face into the cat's fur. Jack kicked and swung. Lee looked out over the cornfield toward the ball diamond lights in town, a circle landing zone for spacecraft, Jack once reasoned out loud. She could hear things. Something moved out there. Jack meditated in his chair with his bare feet playing with the slats of the porch railing. His 4-toned brown afghan splayed across his legs, the newest Oregon magazine opened face down on his lap as if he were letting his penis read for a while. Beside him rested the new Macintosh laptop Cherry had bought for him. Lee stretched her clenched fist high and began her daily litany, noting the beautiful scenes to the others as if they were blind. "Look at the moon, that barn, that dog, it's perfect," she cried. A car honked. Then another. The summer season drew to a close. The swimming pool drained. Girls tossed ball gloves down the basement steps, awakening high school teachers who growled in the night. All put there for us, said Johnny. None of it's real. It's a movie lot front. They take it down as soon as we're gone. Turns back into Buckenwald Presbyterian camp. Cherry looked at Jack as if to ask, where did his son get that stuff? Well, Jack watched a bright star sit above the neighbor's place. A few branches and a big tree framed the moon. The pasture was quiet. A lonely car honked from way downtown, searching for someone, some way to keep the summer from ending. In the silence, shadows emerged from the corn and began to toss a ball around. This isn't our home, said Cherry. Don't start, said Jack. We need to learn to enjoy things. We don't belong here. I mean, what is this? Cherry stretched out her arms to encompass the dark night. So much pain and mystery. This is shit, she said dejectedly. Someday we go back to where we came from. She looked up, just as a shooting star painted the sky. Everybody wants that. Two invisible geese on the creek called to each other intermittently, like junior high school lovers unable to hang up the phone. I'm done. Cherry settled her head on Jack's shoulder, curled her legs, like a cat nestling in for a long winter. The little breeze rattled the corn. The stars competed for attention. The fireflies played in the outfield like partying roadies. The way things have been going, there will be a tomorrow. Jack pulled the paper close to his nose to write it down in big letters so he would be able to read it inside. Beyond all that, not noticeable unless one listened for it, a howl, or a semi-truck on the highway, or the crowd cheering a home team stand-up double. Oh, you're so cute! Johnny touched noses with Vicky. Jack leaned his head back and enjoyed the sing-song of the chain and wood duet. In his lap, he balanced the extant notes for Looking for Bigfoot. The howling got louder. Coyotes, moaned Cherry. They kill, Jack's sister. No negative thoughts allowed out here on the porch on a perfect summer night. Surrounded by goodness and truth and love in Ohio. Bats caught their breakfast. A fox mom pranced out of the den proudly with her two naive pups for their nightly adventure. The whitetail family grazed along with the Holsteins in the rolling meadow just the other side of the corn. Lee watched it all, imagined it without seeing anything out there but her own indigo lawn. What if you were the first person in the world to have a dream, she wondered. What if one night you dreamed about flying and talking birds and snow that came down in red, green, and blue and tasted like sugar, and the next day you tried to tell everyone? Johnny giggled and then screamed as Biggie got caught under his shirt. And nobody believed you until they all started to dream, too. And then they believed you, and then they put you on their shoulders when you came to school the next morning, and the boys fought each other for their turn to play catch with your glove, and the girls all wanted to stand next to you in line. The sound of the crack of the bat carried to the King's Swing from downtown. A skunk smell caught the breeze, and a loud pickup passed on the gravel road, its exhaust gradually scenting the air as well. Hey! Lee stood and held onto the post and moved to the middle of the rail. Don't you guys hear nothing? We'll fall, Terry shouted. It's like 5 feet to the ground, Jack muttered with closed eyes. It is not, it's 10. Now go watch yourself. That's not a coyote. Lee dropped to the beam to sit. Jack and Sherry both shot forward, arms stretched out. When she did not crouch, they waited for the chair and sat back hard together, cracking shoulders, grabbing the arms, nearly falling off, fighting to stay on as if the swing was life and the porch was death. Jack leaned back with his arm in the swing, looking up at the stars, making the swing move with his tippy toes on the wood slat porch. All around him, the stars twinkled and died and were born and shot across galaxies. Secrets whispered into the ear of the first pharaoh bounced along the ocean floor. Space junk bumped into floating anonymous astronauts. The trail of light above the baseball field lights. A shuttle to Urania was missed by all Earthlings except one meditating herder on a hillside southwest of Bethlehem. And a hitchhiker standing on the side of the road pulling his spike cap low in a persistent drizzle looking for a ride out of Salem headed towards Bakersfield. Lee turned around, pulled her legs over the railing, and faced her parents. She pounced up to stand on the beam with her hands on her hips, staring down at them, pitiful in her cozy bundle, not caring, not willing to take a chance. She turned her back on them and leaped from the railing, landed in the soft grass, and rolled, letting her knees give to absorb the shock as she'd seen done by parachutists on the Discovery Channel. Brushing herself off, she turned again to see if they would stop her. Lee looked at Johnny with Biggie stuck on his head. Jack and Sherry watched her, while seated so close they might need to call the damn rescue squad to separate them. The young girl strode 10 strong giant steps to where she could see her parents' faces, then looked back over her shoulder. She stopped. Faced them, hands on hips, chin strong, eyes focused. I'm going out there, she announced. The only problem with the running of the nation was the girl who had lived. The family lay in the road in the gravel and dust in their own blood. The three sprawled in not human poses, arms, elbows, legs, splayed out as if forced into unnatural forms by the men who made the nation. The father and mother and brother with their faces covered in blood, noses shoved into the black Iowa earth. Eyes and mouths open, filled with mucus and dust and disbelief. Just as it should be. If she died, all would be well. All would be awesome. The nation's gears growled, screamed, enormous and oiled, cleverly meshed, showing signs of human genius. They ran and never stopped, but that could not go on forever, because the girl had lived, and she grew stronger. Her bones and her blood would one day become stronger even than gears and oil and grease. They beat and they grew and they knew, because that's what bones and blood can do. The little girl ran at first, but only for a while. She would turn and face her pursuers. Then they would become afraid, because they saw the green steel in her eye. Those who ran the nation looked for her every day, all the time. The work continued. Every dawn of a new day in the nation dripped with immense probability. The little girl was now grown. She stalked the nation, circled its campground in the night like an undiscovered wild animal. Kate, who had changed her name from Lee to protect herself, walked into the quick stop, rushed to the pens by the gum. At the counter, she stood behind two women waving little flags in front of their faces, whispering about eyeshadow, thinking about all the good done by the prison system. Without looking, Kate opened the plastic wrapper, slicing it with a red fingernail. She measured where the woman's spleen might be through her thick corduroy coat. The women giggled at each other and the clerk and moved off out the door. Kate stepped up, now eyeing the plastic jar by the register that asked people to donate for a holiday package for the troops. Kate took a new red pen and drew a swastika on the white paper. Unsure if the cross Z's were quite right, she shrugged. The young man behind the counter watched her, said $1.47. Kate picked up her guitar case and left. On the walk, she adjusted down her white twins cap with blood-red lettering and straightened her black cape with another shrug. Kate moved on with long, powerful, limping strides, back straight, eyes ahead. When passing men and boys stopped to stare, she acted as if she did not notice. The crowd on the curb grew like a swarming beehive. Soon the early winter sun would turn its back and leave snipers to their business. A shocking fire engine horn blared somewhere down the street. The motorcade would not be long now. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the spot and went for it, glad for the chance to rest her burning leg. Kate found her perch, all planned out weeks ago after she read about the big visit. She stopped, letting the hurried foot traffic find its path around her. Kate sat on the curb and rubbed dirt off her favorite red tennis shoes. She leaned back against the barren, round concrete planter and opened the guitar case flat on the sidewalk on one side of her. And on the other side, she set her coffee, staking a steaming claim to the space. She drew her materials from the case, setting the white notebook and sleeve of pens on the walk. She closed the case and set it down just so that across the street the people with their flags could see the 9/11 was an inside job sign in red ink and black border on white paper. And the folks behind her saw, "This machine kills fascists." With pens, red, blue, black, green, purple, now in her hands, behind her ears, in her mouth, on the sidewalk, in the street, Kate took her left hand, touched the clean white pad pressed against one bent knee, aimed down the street. She sighted over the pad and began to sketch the wide street, the crowds on both sides, each leaning to get a look around the next person, the walkway over the street connecting the corporate bookstore to the city bank building. Kate drew big, dark clouds overhead, and inside the clouds, big, thick, black words around the edges of her canvas. Doom, despair, Dickensian, poverty, war, Tolstoyan, poverty, unfairness, Dostoevskian, misery, deceit. On her side of the street, she gave birth to a family standing together, exchanging looks of anticipation with each other on the far end of the street and strobing police lights. The mother's son, daughter appeared Neanderthal with low, deep brow ridges over the eyes like caves. They sprouted tufts of hair in unlikely places on the backs of their wrists and on their faces. Each wore either a gold or silver cross around their necks on a chain. They wore red, white, and blue buttons on their white-shirted chests that said murder. They darted nervous monkey looks all around and swayed their long arms, whispering, hissing, murder, murder, murder. In their big hairy hands, they sloppily held American flags on tiny sticks. Kate adjusted her bottom on the cool cement and curled her toes inside her shoes, staring yet harder at her paper world. She would have said she liked her green eyes, like green lanterns, fiery gems, fiendish, inquiring, the one open and laughing, the other devilish. She tugged at her cap and narrowed her eyes, aiming a laser down the street. Children dashed back and forth, gaining advantage over rivals for candy tossers. There'd be no candy today. Kate had silently given herself the nickname Avenger. She'd considered getting a superhero tattoo on her behind or maybe her neck. Kate's long hair glistened thick and black. She had a cheerleader homecoming queen face with revolutionary Russian coffee shop eyes. Erotic, piercing, unbelieving. Her black cape buttoned around her neck. She wore black half gloves, home fashion, cut off at the knuckles. She wore her cap proudly. It was her dad's, white with red twins letters, adjustable. The cover of her worn artist pad pictured a stick person drawing in ink, a large Bigfoot. On the first inside page was another sketch, more like a child's doodling, of a group of three people stretched on a road with a helicopter above them and dot bullets raining from it. A cornfield runs along the road, and a stick figure little girl stands in the corn with dots of tears falling down her face. A stick figure woman runs from the far end of the corn through the corn toward the crying child. Kate drew the new red pen from her mouth. On the top of her fresh drawing, she wrote Vengeance. Large letters across the page, a banner headline. She underlined it and then again and again. She filled in the letters and traced them again, wider, deeper, darker. Three black and white police cars appeared under the walkway, side by side across the street, lights flashing. Behind them came a like phalanx of fire engines with horns blaring, honking like inherently angry geese. They sat for a moment beneath the walkway where an enterprising rifle person should be sitting, squeezing off round after round, thought Kate. But the thick glass was vacant. Shatterproof, likely, triple ply, truth resistant. Kate filled in the scene on her pad as quickly as she could manage, switching colors in a flurry, not noticing a group that had formed behind her, blowing breath puffs like a cattle yard in January, pawing, digging at the cement with cold feet, stuffing hands deeper into pockets, leaning hunched shoulders forward to see what the street artist was doing. She's not very good, a girl told her father, who shrugged and looked up at the new sound. A cheer, a crescendo, a wave of voices rolling, crashing, breaking along both sides of the street. The police cars and fire engines and horns and lights inched forward, gradually revealing a third layer, a four-wide cabal. Shoulder-to-shoulder black limousines with tiny American flags fluttering from the front quarter panels. Kate tried to stare a laser beam into the closed, darkened windshields of the vehicles, but they kept coming. Kate drew carefully as best she could, hurrying, sweating, needing to stop the progress of the parade. She concocted a woman standing in the middle of the street, fists dug hard into her sides, feet wide, staring straight into the flashing lights of the oncoming motorcade parade. A black cape fluttered from her shoulders. Her long black hair stretched out behind her likewise in the steady northwest breeze. She showed off a Bigfoot tattoo around her belly button. She wore a red mask over her eyes and black lipstick and rings on 7 of her fingers. She wore cherry red tennis shoes and jeans torn at the knees. Her white tight t-shirt pictured an American flag and in bold, thick red letters, Progressive Avenger. And that's the news. From Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. I'd like to thank you all for listening to the New American Dream Radio Show tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm Chuck Gregory, and I'd like to thank our guests and thank all of you.
People's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gear.